This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, I have just gotten back for two very fascinating weeks in, of all places, Cuba. A most interesting trek. I also have a most interesting guest, one of my favorite guests in the whole world, Francine Hardaway, who has observations on just about everything. I want to begin the discussion. First of all, welcome. Welcome
back.
Thank
you. Thank you for having me. I can't wait to hear about your trip.
Well, let me start out, because I very, very briefly, but I don't think you can consider anything about Cuba without a little bit of understanding of history. And we take this back to Monroe Doctrine. Monroe declares to the Europeans, get out of the Western Hemisphere. But part two of that is the Western Hemisphere is pretty much our domain. That is activated in just about every action that we've had since then. There has been levels of U.S. involvement and domination and interference in most of the Western Hemisphere. In the case of Cuba, it was manifest in the Spanish-American War of 1898, after which Cuba became in reality, if not in name, an American colony for a few years, followed by over a half a century of very, very substantial, not colony, but heavy, heavy, heavy duty influence. And my image of the pre-Castro Cuba is that, Castro came in January 1, 1959. But before that, the 40s and 50s, I think of Cuba, I think of mob influence, I think casinos, I think, sort of American playground. And interestingly, somehow in all of that, your dad was involved.
Yes. Well, I grew up in New York. My father was an attorney. And he was an entertainment lawyer. And Cuba was the place that was closest to Miami Beach, which is, there's a New York axis, you know, it's like New York, Florida, Cuba. So a lot of my father's talent played in Cuba. And also, my father knew a lot of the mob guys, and the mob guys actually knew, they ran the casinos. So Cuba was pretty mobbed up in the 40s and 50s, and my parents went down there all the time. Sometime when I was in high school, there became rumors that somebody was going to come into power and maybe kick everybody out. And very suddenly, and at the time I was going out with a guy whose father ran all the baccarat games in Cuba. So clearly this guy had several last names. So clearly he had issues. So, and I, you
meaning
know,
that as in aliases?
As in one day he was Sanofsky.
Okay.
And one day, not the Microsoft Sanofsky. And one day he was Snow.
Mm-hmm.
So it depended on where you were.
All right.
So I think the mob things were Sanofsky. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sure he's not alive anymore. Anyway, when I was in high school,
And we're talking 50s now, right?
Yeah. I graduated in 58. The casinos suddenly were closed, and people all had to leave. And they—
By Castro.
By Castro. Castro came to power. He closed the casinos, and everybody left for Las Vegas. And that's how Las Vegas got started, because all the mob guys—
Got same, thrown out of Cuba.
Same mob guys, same mob families who got thrown out of Cuba went to Las Vegas and started up all the casinos there.
Now, I got to tell you a little casino story.
I think this is pretty funny because you couldn't shut them down. You know, you just moved them.
Well, I'll tell you one story. One of my hosts there, a couple of doctors that I befriended were kind of my guides through a lot of this. And he pointed out this building in his neighborhood and he said, you know, this used to be a casino. and it was taken over by the government. The government turned it into some government offices or functions. And this would have been, you know, after Castro, so probably early 60s. And then after they refurbished it as government building, it mysteriously burns.
What a surprise.
And then they rebuild it, and then it burns again.
The mob doesn't go easy.
And it is 20,000 in 19. That building is no longer used.
Yeah, there was a big, you know, fight between Castro. In a way, Castro was right, because Castro promised the Cuban people that he would kick out the mob. That's how he came to power. He said, I'm going to get rid of the mob, because the in Cuba, the mob had everything and the people had nothing. So the only difference is that the people still have nothing in Cuba, you know, as far as I know, only the mob is not there anymore.
Well, the interesting point of this, I think, to me was, well, the mob can't operate there, but they can still
burn the buildings down.
They can burn a building down. Doesn't require a great deal of infrastructure.
Right.
I went and visited in the eastern part of the country, Santiago, which is where Castro started out. He didn't start in Havana.
No, I know.
He triumphantly arrived in Havana. And there was a military barracks that he attacked in 1955. And it was a disaster for them. And most of the people, including him, were captured. And the military commander, a lot of the guys were tortured and executed. But the military commander arranged that Castro would it would be publicized that he was still alive, and so they couldn't kill him, and so subsequently he's in prison a couple of years and then gets released, goes to Mexico. The commander who did that for him subsequently became in charge of Castro's security operation.
Yeah.
For many, many decades. And interestingly,
and you can see why.
The symbolic thing that that Castro did is that military barracks that he first attacked. This is 4 years before he comes back and actually is successful. But he's turned it into a school, with the exception of a small little piece in the corner, which is a museum.
That is interesting. And quite frankly, this is probably going to be terribly controversial, but Castro was not all bad for Cuba.
Oh, you know, you had an awful regime. The mob was not a friendly employer.
Exactly.
The Cubans were getting nothing.
There was a lot of violence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was a lot of bad stuff there. And there were several – we'll get into this later, but there were – even though this is a poor country, and they have we'll spend most of the show talking about the problems, three things that he did that you have to commend. Number one,
healthcare.
That's one of the three. You bet. Healthcare for everybody. I know that's your thing.
That's my thing.
And the validation of the quality of the healthcare is that their life expectancy is higher than ours. Not by much, but by a little. And this is a poor country that spends very little on healthcare.
I have known people who've gone to Cuba on medical tourism now. Mm-hmm. Because of that.
No, this is not a great place to move to if you're a doctor, because I knew one of my hosts there was a vascular surgeon who's working in a hospital for the sum of $50 a month. If you start out as a general practitioner, the range is 30 to 50. 50 is kind of the top wage in government. That's about as high as you go.
Wow.
I mean, it's not there are issues with how you do it. And in a poor country, this is one of the ways you do it.
That's what communism is all about, you know.
Well, number two, nobody starves. Everybody gets a ration. Now, you're not going to want to eat the ration. It's basically rice and beans and a chicken a month. So this is not high cuisine. this is an absence of starvation. And the third thing is pretty much you don't see homelessness. And I was accosted a number of times by people, you know, asking for money a little bit. But these were, relative to San Francisco people, you see, these were affluent. they were mobile. Some of that was just a hustle.
Did you ever read the book The Economic Hitman?
No.
about how America comes into these cultures and piles them on with debt to economically develop them and build infrastructure and destroys the whole old culture. And the new culture is just debt.
Sounds like what the Chinese are doing right now everywhere.
Well, right. But see, and the Americans did it. The Chinese learned it from the Americans. Mm. The Americans did it for a long time. But Cuba basically got opted out of that. And I think they might have been lucky because I now have, after years of being involved in it, very mixed feelings about economic development as a as an institutional strategy or whatever you want to call it.
We'll get back to economic development, all things Cuba, when we return. Francine Hardaway in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Well, we're talking about all things Cuba. We talked about Castro. Castro came into power due to an inequitable economic system, nationalism, the notion of equality, and the notion of bringing prosperity. I think, by the way, that's what most of these movements are about. They're not about big ideas about communism or capitalism. They are always, in every instance I'm aware of,
a chicken in every pot.
Yes. It's about we're going to live better. And number two, very often, nationalism. That's what we missed, for example, in Vietnam. We thought it was about communism. It was 98% about this is our country.
Exactly.
Which is not unlike our own revolution, where that was about, well, are we a country? Or are we part of Britain? That's part of that was the complication in our case. But in most of these other cases, first of all, even if we're going to be run by a crook, it's going to be one of our crooks.
Right.
And I did meet with fascinating discussion with somebody who was an original revolutionary marched with Castro and is very disillusioned because, you know, they didn't get the prosperity with it.
Yeah.
You know, though. And
what are the maybe I shouldn't ask you this until the next segment. But what about the human rights?
I would say here my observation is in terms of the politics and free speech. There is a feeling that they monitor electronic stuff, so you don't people they have Facebook and stuff like that, but you're not going to find political stuff there. There are at least rumors that there are political monitors on every block. I don't know if it's true or not. Probably doesn't have to be true as long as you think they are.
Do they have the infrastructure, the technology infrastructure to have that if they don't have economic prosperity?
Yeah, they do have. Well, yes and no. I'll tell you about the internet. But first, let me backtrack about to the free speech. In their homes, privately, people will speak very candidly and free of retribution. Okay. But that's when you know them and you're private. It's not like they bugged every single home. But I wouldn't go onto social media. I wouldn't go out in the street with a, you know,
soapbox.
Yeah. I mean, that's trouble.
Yeah.
And I would say the other thing about politics, there is disillusionment and disenchantment, but it doesn't feel like ripe for people to march into the street. It's kind of a very, you know what the safety valve is there? The young people are leaving. Especially the educated ones. They don't see a future. You'll hate this part for education while they have. Oh, by the way, that was the third part of the free education for everybody. Now, here's the problem they have in the schools, which are by and large pretty good.
The young people are leaving.
Well, it's convincing young. You'll say to the young person, you should study and you can become a doctor or an engineer. And you know what the kids say? They say, I want to make some money. I want to be a cab driver or a tour guide. Because that's how you make money. $50 a month tops for a doctor, most of them 30. So everybody who works for the government.
So your vascular surgeon friend makes $50 a month?
As a government employee, yeah. Yeah.
And then does that carry him through the month?
First of all, interesting Francine Hardaway choice of pronouns. She
oops.
Yeah.
Does that? Oh wait, then I might as well really go down that road. Is she married to a guy who makes more?
Just no. But she rents out rooms, and that's where the real income comes from.
Airbnb,
absolutely not Airbnb, but
tourism.
Like that. Yeah, tourism. Yeah. Yes. So everybody either rents out rooms, works as a tour guide, works as an artist. You can buy a lot of really good art there, often painted by doctors. really inexpensively, okay? And that this is a huge, somehow tied to the tourism industry, is how people make enough money to get beyond subsistence. The monthly allotment will keep you alive, but barely.
That was true before. I mean, that was true with the gambling pre-Castro. It was the tourism industry.
Yeah, but you didn't have the social safety net of rice and beans. They've raised the floor. Yes. Right. Now here's what they've lost. They've lost relative to expectations. I think, are people better off now than they were in 1958? Yes, they are, but they're nowhere near where they expect to be. And of course, the rest of the world has gotten better too. And in relative terms, they've fallen behind. In objective terms, not so. I can tell you, well, I'll come back after the break and I'll tell you about comments from two older people who've seen, there's a huge age gap here because the older people have seen what it was like before. The younger people are just upset with what they see now. They know they're not keeping up with the rest of the world. The older people remember how it was. We'll be back with Francine Hardaway talking Cuba in the Think Tank.
The new Jerusalem. Silver cities rise, the morning lights, the streets that lead them, and sirens call them on.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're talking all things Cuba here with my guest, Francine Hardaway. Before the break, I promised to say something about differences in generational attitudes. Okay,
right.
Younger people look out at the rest of the world and they're saying we're not keeping up with the rest of the world. Older people are two views. I remember I had a discussion with one woman who works in the foreign ministry. And she's expressing some frustrations at various things. And her grandma says, listen, you don't know how it was before the revolution.
Yeah. See, I have a feeling that the revolution for them wasn't all bad. And the very interesting thing is we were so connected to Cuba before we got kicked out of there that I can remember at my Sweet 16 party, what we were doing was the mambo and the cha-cha and the merengue and all the Latin dances and all the Tito Puente, you know, all the major, major Latin music figures originated in Cuba.
And a lot of that is very Afrocentric.
Right, exactly.
You know, which ours got mitigated through a lot of other stuff.
Right.
They have more of the direct influence.
I think they have a phenomenal musical culture.
Oh, yeah. Well, they get everything that we get, but they do other stuff that we never hear. So it's bigger, yeah. Wider. I think the thing about how people look, it depends on where they were pre-1959. If you were on the lower end, now you have a safety net.
Right.
And if you were middle class, you look at that
which
safety
is more
net,
than we really have.
Well, yeah, you don't have people starving on the street. But, I mean, the ration is meager. It's boring. But you're not starving is about what it is. The health care is good. The education is good. Both are free. By the way, they do have a commitment that goes with education of a 1 to 3 year commitment of working for the government. And now for
and
many,
after, and after that commitment, is that when the young people leave?
Often, I think they can sometimes leave. They can leave somewhat. I mean, you have to get permission. You got to go through there's a bureaucracy. I mean, I was with somebody going through that. You're filing paper. Oh, that is one of the things that would drive you and I nuts. The inefficiencies of trying to do anything. It's like
I've been
you know,
in India.
Think levels of bureaucracy. No, internet, for example. They have internet.
I heard that the internet is really bad and
it's
spotty.
Awful. It's absolute. Here's where you will get most of it. There is regular from cellular, but it is extremely slow. Most people use it through Wi-Fi. You will know where the Wi-Fi spots are because you will see a public park filled with people looking at their phones. Yeah. And that's a Wi-Fi spot. And they're all around.
Obviously.
It's $1 an hour, which now, mind you, put that in the context of the salary.
$50 a month.
Right, $50. Yeah. $1 an hour. And you pay for it whether it works or not. And usually it doesn't work. And you buy these physical cards.
Yeah, that's
to
like
do it.
That's like when I was in Africa in 2004.
Well, let me contrast. Last year, I was in Cambodia, which is 1,000 times better.
Oh,
Vietnam
yeah,
is 1,000.
All the Asian countries have kick-ass internet.
And compared to us, and we are one of the worst countries.
We are a laggard.
And they are 100 right. times worse than us.
Yeah.
So, and you know where this comes from. The government is doing this, and Google could fix this in 60 days. But, you know, they've got this history of foreign involvement that they right. are very, very reticent about, and not without some reason.
Well, so. and we do. I mean, how would – if Google went to work in Cuba, would they feel – and I don't even know who I'm talking about when I say they. But would the mythical they feel any better than Google going to China? You know what I'm saying? There's tremendous.
I don't know what day you're talking about.
Employees, some of their stakeholders, and citizens, and the American.
Well, first of all, scale, it would be insignificant compared to China. You know, it's sort of like the whole economic embargo thing,
right?
Which has hurt them. It's insignificant to us because we are so much larger,
right?
And one estimate that I heard on this. By the way, you walk around. This is the thing that's really sad, or one of them. Architecture, beautiful, gorgeous architecture, crumbling.
No operational funds.
Nothing. And embargo is a role of that. Poverty is a part of that.
Yeah.
You know what would happen if they opened it up to foreign development, though? It's a mixed bag. They would fix that
stuff.
You get
the economic hitman.
You would get guys come in. I'd buy property down there. You know, you'd pick it up for a song. You'd fix it up. And then Havana would become an international city like
right.
Shanghai.
Right.
You know, not on the scale, but it would get fixed up.
But then what would happen to the people, the poor?
Well,
where would they go?
Well, the poor, the people who own property there would do very well.
Yeah.
And everybody there, I mean, essentially, what one of the things when the revolution came in, people who owned multiple properties gave them all up but one. They got to keep one house. Okay.
Okay.
And if it's a big house, they got to keep the big house, and those are the people who are renting out Airbnb right now. So just about everybody there owns their house. An interesting system, too. No property taxes, no income taxes, no sales taxes.
So where does the government get its money?
Well, they hire people for $30 a month. Okay.
Well, that's on the spending side.
That's on the spending side.
They keep their expenses
nickel and dime,
low.
They nickel and dime tourists. Well, you know, $1 an hour for Wi-Fi – that probably costs nothing. Okay, they're making money there. The people who are doing Airbnb, they're taxing that at 65%. I mean, they're going after the tourist. There is a 10% penalty in each direction when you change dollars. Only dollars, by the way. They charge a 3% fee to change money, which is sort of what you're going to pay
East
at any
Germany
bank anyway.
East Germany used to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. East. Mandatory. They have what they called CUC, convertible currency, which they fix at one to the dollar, which is, of course, not a real rate. Then they have the local currency, which is worth 1/25th of the CUC.
Yeah.
If I take a dollar bill in there, they'll give me 87 what they call kooks, CUC, convertible currency. And if I trade it back, it's going to cost me another 13 cents. So they're nickeling, diming tourists on little here, little there.
What if you use a credit card? Or do they
take credit
cards?
No credit cards. The only place in the world I couldn't use a credit card, including the jungles of Cambodia, okay?
Yeah.
The system is cut off in that regards. It's heavily cash. Now, by the way, you can get around the thing just by trading with people.
Yeah, of course.
Freely, and you'll get a full dollar for a dollar because there's folks there who would love to have dollars. They don't spend it locally, but my sense is it sort of leaves the country somewhere or another. So,
and goes to Miami.
Yeah, though there's more money going the other direction. I mean, there's remittances from Cuban Americans to Cuba is much, much big. The people who are sending money out are planning on leaving.
You know, it's very interesting because Barack Obama tried to open it up.
He did.
And then Trump shut it down partially.
Yes, exactly. And I was
and
there.
And now it's not even on the radar.
Well, here's what's happened. You can go there. There's a category called support for the Cuban people. You know how you support the Cuban people according to the State Department website?
You go there and spend money.
You go there and spend, not in government things. Now, you don't want to go in a government hotel anyway, unless you want to spend $500 a night for a low-grade Holiday Inn, yeah. 1950s caliber.
So you
want
to stay at an Airbnb.
For $25 a night.
Yeah.
And you want to eat in the Paladores, which are privately run restaurants, which are the only ones you want to eat in anyway. So you can support the arts by attending art events. Now, you're not allowed to do tourism, but you put all that together as a package, and that is under the category support for the Cuban people, but most people don't know it. I think the effect of the recent change was to make most people believe that you couldn't do. And it did cut the volume of two things.
It totally did, because I was going to go, and then I became confused about whether I still could. I thought I'd missed the window.
I read the State Department stuff, and I wasn't sure I understood it, and I went to friends and did it, and I'd been there before, and I said, all right, I know what the rule was, and it's changed. But the catch-all category is support for the Cuban people. You can go. They have cut out now, but what they've done is cut it down by 90% because A, people believe they can't go, and B, they have eliminated the cruise ships, which were pure tourism.
Oh, they have eliminated. So that's what I was going to do.
When I was there 2 years ago, the harbor was filled with cruise ships. This time there was one. So here's what can't go. You can't be an American flagship, or you can't be a ship that stops in American port. Well, if you're going to Cuba, you're going to Miami, right?
Yeah.
So there's one ship there. I probably went from Costa Rica or Mexico or something like that. So you got to.
Because you used to have to fly through Mexico to
get
to Cuba.
And you don't. No, they're direct flights. I threw Houston. And while I was there, they imposed an additional restriction, which is you can now fly only into Havana. That's what I did anyway, though I considered going into Santiago because getting from Havana to Santiago took me the exact amount of time as it took to get to from here to Myanmar with a 5-hour layover in Hong Kong. Okay. It was by bus and it was 16 hours. Nice bus.
16 hours on a bus.
Well, there's a bus with about six or eight stops along the way, along roads that were adequate. Not great, but adequate. But it, essentially in the bus, I took part of that route in the last trip.
How's
by
the
car.
Sanitation? Euphemistically.
Oh, no. You know what? I will. They didn't have, I don't think the bus had a potty, but you had a lot of stops. And, here's one of the neat things, though. The stops along the way serve food. And because they were government run, you know how when you eat at a ballpark or a entertainment facility, you expect to be gouged, right? It was not. It was absolute street pricing and very often good food in places like bus stops in the middle of nowhere and whatever.
Oh,
you
that's
ate
great.
Well and you ate cheap because it was. I think the bus wearing was mostly Cubans, but it was like a Peter Pan type bonanza bus. You know,
when I was a kid, we in like first grade, we had a unit called the three most important things in life: food, clothing, and shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like the Cubans have those.
Food, well, rice and beans. If you've got an outside gig, then you can
get a vegetable.
Then you can get whatever you want.
Yeah.
With the outside clothing. Everybody seemed well-dressed. My guess is they don't have a closet like ours. They might have only, I don't know, some smaller number of changes, okay? And shelter, the housing the outsides were very often.
See, I'm thinking environment, and I'm thinking climate change.
Well, I'll tell you the worst thing, absolute worst thing about the environment of those cars. You know, one 1950s car gives out 100 times the pollution of a modern car. So that automobile fleet, and I have asthma, and I'm immediately sensitive. I can tell you in 30 seconds, I can tell you the air quality of any place I'm in, and it was awful in Havana. We got to return with Francine Hardaway in the Think Tank when we come back for a final segment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Mike O'Neill here with Francine Hardaway talking about Cuba, recently returned. I am from there. Two myths I'd like to dispel, or one anyway. The access to media. in Cuba is just about universal, but it doesn't come in the way you think it would.
That's what I thought was amazing when we were talking during the break.
Yeah.
Tell them how it comes in.
Basically,
I would think it would stream in or come by satellite.
The technology infrastructure is not good enough for that. I mean, you're lucky to get text. I mean, we're talking, take your internet speed and the slowest thing you got and divide by 100. That's what we're talking about. But they get it. Here's how they get it. Somebody in Miami or somewhere will copy over gigabytes worth of stuff onto a hard disk. Okay, they will truck it to Cuba, and then there will be a network of people who will just make a copy of this. On that, you will find everything from CNN to Fox News to HBO, Showtime, you name it. It's they get it. They're going to get everything.
That's what used to happen in China.
Yeah. You will just get it. It's what we used to call sneaker net, right?
Sneaker net, right.
They get it. When I was there 2 years ago, they watched all the U.S. presidential debates. It's not streaming over the internet, but there's a 1 week delay, but they get, of course, most people, most stuff want, to get, the entertainment, you know, that's
yeah,
obviously
that,
the biggest
thing.
Yeah,
a 1 week delay on that doesn't
well,
doesn't
or even
any...
for that matter, news, if you're getting it a week late, you're still getting it. And, you know,
right.
I was away for 2 weeks and I had very limited access to information from the outside. When I came back, I was hit with, geez, nothing's changed.
It's, you know, you know, that's true. And the general level of happiness?
There?
Yeah.
I would say most people are a bit frustrated, but it's kind of like, ooh, resignation. It's not like anybody's ready to take to the streets. Safety. Some of the older folks who remember how it was say, "Hey, look, a grandchild here.
Yeah,
it's
so,
better than it was."
So, what happens when they die?
That's an interesting question. I don't see.
Because the Castros were pretty charismatic.
The question I think is, absolutely. And loved.
Yes.
And you see, you know who's this great commercial thing for Cuba? This is hilarious. Che is everywhere and you can buy t-shirts and mugs and Che's making a lot of capitalist money for Cuba. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So. But, I mean, that's the point. Yeah. If it's.
I guess my hope and maybe expectation is as you switch into a new generation that they learn to loosen up on some things and the system over time evolves. Like in China, there was an evolution essentially after Tiananmen. They said, all right, you can have your economy. Just let us keep our political control. You know, there are people in power who are doing well and they're not going to want to give up power.
Yeah. But, so the situation in China, you know, a communist country.
Well, we'll get into that. Okay. And another, we're going to do the whole other show on communism and socialism and all that. But the other point I want to make, the last one really, where they have opened up is micro ventures. So, for example, on the streets, there are cabs maybe every 30 seconds. Really interesting style, negotiated rates, but a totally different kind of negotiation. This is a 3-second negotiation. They don't go back and forth. You tell them what you want to pay, where you want to go. They say yes or no, and they're on. And if they say no, there's another cab coming 30 seconds later. So the restaurants,
so
private restaurants are good.
It's not Uber. It's not centralized.
It's not, again, lousy internet. They don't have the internet to support
right.
that. It's on the street, though. But essentially, you stick up your hand. Now, if you're a tourist, they will usually not budge on the rate. They're going to get tourist rates. I went in the company of a Cuban who did all the negotiation. I kept my mouth shut. We usually got Cuban rates. And we weren't fooling anybody. They can spot a tourist a mile away. I was not a Cuban, and they knew it. But I was in the company of somebody else who did all the talking. How did I manage that? There was
to
a friend.
Let somebody else do all the talking. I'm just being funny.
Mi español mo pequito. you want to pay 50 cents for a cab ride or 10 bucks. I should keep my mouth shut for that one.
do they speak a lot of English?
Educated people. English is the language taught in the schools. Most people, it's sort of like our Spanish would be. People have had it in the school. It's not real great, but, some people are a lot better than other. The people who I know who are really good got some private, tutoring besides, but it's for about the last 30 years, like China, you know, they switched and this was the primary language that was taught as a second language in schools.
So if you wanted to go visit now, mm-hmm. How do you make the arrangements?
Oh,
I'm asking
go.
This on behalf
you just
of-
answer real simple. You just go. You have self-certify. I sent away for a visa from Cuba in advance. Turns out you can get them at the airport gate for $75. I paid a $25 fee in addition to that just to feel better about it. When I'm on my way through Houston, at the exit gate in Houston, there's an operation there that'll sell you it for cash.
Oh, okay.
You just go. Is the answer. You got to make sure that you read this stuff about support for the Cuban people. Don't stay in a government hotel. Don't stay. You're not going to want to do that anyway.
And you don't get – and you get on an airplane.
Yes.
Okay.
From America. Now most of them go through Fort Lauderdale. I got one through Houston. Lauderdale on the way back. Standard American JetBlue Southwest.
Yeah. Okay. The reason I'm asking that is because when – Cuba first opened up, the main way people got there to take that trip was on the cruise ships.
Yeah, well, they've cut the cruise ships. This was the Obama opened it up, and Trump has closed it, but he's not slammed the door. He's just convinced most people that it's impossible and makes it sound foreboding. But in point of fact, and this category that you get, you self-certify, and I understand 100,000 people have gone and no one has yet been audited. So
yeah,
if they do, you just keep an itinerary where you've been and who you talk to.
And that's why I'm asking on behalf of your audience if they want to go.
You can go. And unless they close the door further, that's not going to be an issue.
Okay.
So, and I think given the politics of Florida, we're soon going to see a flip on that. You know, basically, it's anti-Castro Cubans that are responsible for this. And it has to do with the politics of Florida and who gets elected president is what's really behind this at this point.
Okay.
That's it. I would encourage you to go. It's fascinating, especially if you love, you know, sort of getting your fingers into place that are a little
off the beaten
track.
And you love Cuban food and Cuban music, both of which are amazing.
I ate very well, very cheap.
Yep.
I'm a bargain hunter in that regard. Thank you very much, Francine. We'll be back. We'll talk about one of these coming weeks. We're going to talk about communism, socialism, the whole thing. When we return in the think tank.
And sirens call them on.